This is the Business Storytelling Show with Christoph Trapp. Name a top 20 storytelling podcast and a top 5% podcast globally, Christoph chats with thought leaders and experts to share tips and tricks that can help you tell your company's stories better to drive business results. Available wherever you listen to podcasts, live streamed on major social media channels, and part of the DB&A television network, available on most U.S. television sets and streaming on Roku and Amazon Fire. Here's Christoph with today's episode. Let's go.
Let's go, business storytellers. Hey, how's everyone doing? Fist bump. Let's get this episode going. So, hey, really quickly, we're on Amazon Live. So I want to mention very briefly the items you're seeing on the show today. This microphone, I hope everybody can hear me just fine. I love it. I love it. I love it. And I know years ago I talked about how I didn't need a microphone, but it sounds so much better. This chair. Yes, I'm a 40-year-old something dude in a gaming chair because you know what? It is comfortable. What else? This virtual physical backdrop makes my background look so much nicer than what's typically back there, which is nothing. If you're not watching on Amazon, authenticstorytelling.net/live. Ships you over to Amazon. You can check out all the products that you are seeing on today's show. But now let's talk about the most important product that we're going to focus most of our time on today. 25 minutes to go on today's show, so no time to waste. This is Positioning for Advantage, Techniques and Strategies to Grow Brand Value, Kimberly Whittler. And of course, she's joining me today. I did already leave a review on Amazon, and I hope you guys check this out, because here's the thing. If you're not going to build a brand, I know some of you don't like to talk about this because you're just trying to hustle me and sell me, and I don't even know you. You got to build a brand, seriously. So how do we do that? What's positioning for advantage? And we'll dive into that topic. And, you know, let's build a brand. Let's be relevant. Let's stay in front of people. Let's get the author. You probably saw this one coming on the show, Kim Whittler. Really glad we were able to connect. And thanks for joining me.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks so much.
Awesome. So tell me about the book. So Positioning for Advantage. I think I know what it means, but give me the high level overview. Why did you write it? Why is this important? And what is it most importantly?
Well, I'm actually glad to really be here on your program, because this is all about storytelling, right? Well, where do brand stories come from? And so if you think about positioning, the book title, Positioning for Advantage, let me start for a second and just talk about brands and then how brands relate to positioning and then what we mean by, or what I mean by positioning for advantage. So, you know, brands are essentially everything that you think of when you see a brand, brand name or a logo. It's all the associations that you have, good and bad. And a brand can be anything. It can be a product. It can be a service. It can be something like a book. It can be a person. It can be an ideology. You know, conservatives and liberals, those are brands. It can be an idea, Mothers Against Drunk Driving. And so these brands, you know, what you're trying to do when you're building a brand is you're trying to identify a position in the marketplace that's a territory that a brand can own relative to competitors. And so positioning for advantage is literally simply just trying to identify the position that you want the brand to own. And when you think about that positioning, it's relative to competitors and it's relative to what consumers need and want. And so positioning for advantage then is a series of techniques, really tools on how you can identify and position a brand to win in the marketplace.
And what's interesting about what consumers want is such an interesting topic. We could probably talk about that for hours here. But Nick Graham on Real Talk, which I produce for Vox Pop Me, he is the head of global insights at Mondelez. And he said, you know, the quote, Henry Ford quote about horses, whatever, you know, if I would have asked people what they wanted, they would have said faster horses. And he said, that is an excuse, my friends. If you say this quote says you can't innovate, because here's the thing. They said faster horses because they didn't know cars. But you can totally get from that quote that they wanted to go faster. And then you, as the brand, you can figure out how to make that happen. Don't expect everybody else to give you all the answers. So when we are positioning our brand, though, how do we figure that out? How do we, and I've done a few brands, and sometimes there was a false start because, you know, the consumer wasn't thinking about it the same way, or the consumer wasn't using the same language, or, you know, or it wasn't the right timing. I mean, think about podcasting. Podcasts have been around forever and ever, you know, 10 years, 15 years, I don't know, maybe not 20 years. But right now, they're kind of blowing up, right? So the timing is right again. How do we get all those things together and figuring out how do we create that superior brand?
Yeah. So I, by the way, on that Henry Ford piece, I say exactly the same thing, because what I hear from young people oftentimes, they'll quote Steve Jobs, or they'll, you know, it's always an excuse why not to listen to the consumer, why to just go design whatever you want to make. And the way I articulate it is that, consumers can tell you what their pain points are. They can tell you that they don't really love to have a phone that's tethered to a wall, but they are not engineers and they can't go design, you know, an iPod or an iPhone or a car. And so the reason you listen to consumers is it helps you understand where in their journey they're having problems, what their issues are, what the obstacles are, what the barriers to purchase. But then you, of course, need engineers to figure out how to actually design a solution. And then you go and you test those designs with consumers, and they can react to the designs. So, you know, as marketers, we firmly believe largely that you should start with the consumer. And so to answer your other question, you know, where do you start to create superior brands? Well, it starts with the consumer. We believe in an outside-in version of design, which means you try to understand the consumer, you understand the marketplace, and then you try to identify, test, and validate a superior territory. So in the book, I have kind of three sets of tools, one that starts with strategy, then I have bridging tools, then I have activation tools. And at the very beginning of the process, what you want to try to do is figure out where you want to plant your stake, and then you go design against that. If I can, let me share a story, since we're on a storytelling podcast, that Please. Will make this, I think, a little bit more vivid. So part of my awareness of how bad the problem was is I was being approached by different entrepreneurs. And I'll share the story of one entrepreneur who had built this really terrific watch. He came to me, he had iterated it over 200 times, perfected the product, excellent product. And when he told me the problem that he was trying to solve, I can't say that because it's confidential, but I said, I knew inherently, because I've done hundreds, if not thousands, of concept tests, I knew that the problem he was solving was not a big one, but that the technology could actually solve a much bigger, more pervasive problem. And so I asked him, I said, so you've spent years now perfecting the technology. I said, what's the idea? What's the spot, the territory in the market that you want to own? Have you perfected the idea? He had no idea what I was talking about. No idea. So he immediately launched into, let me go design a widget. I personally have this problem, so I'll solve my problem. It's not a big problem. Not a lot of people have that problem, but I'll go solve this problem. And so when I helped him understand kind of the process, you know, the light bulb went off. This happens over and over again. If you look at a big sophisticated company, if you look at E&J Gallo, or you go to Pepsi, or you go to Coke or Procter & Gamble or Unilever, they won't just start designing things. They'll start by saying, is there a market for this? And so is there a position that we could possibly own that fits who we are as a company and our competencies, that is better than competitors, and that there's a need from a consumer standpoint? And so they start with this exercise of identifying the territory until they say, gosh, this is a big problem. You know, many companies have hurdles. They have to go prove on paper that the project is actually going to be big enough to invest resources into. And so that's all a paper exercise with consumers, a research exercise to try to figure out what the territory is. Once you do that, you then convert it into a brand strategy, there's different terms for this. Some companies call it brand architecture, brand design, brand essence statement. But essentially, you convert the position in the marketplace to a specific brand design. You then have to go activate that brand design to then hopefully achieve the image in the minds and hearts of your consumer. So on paper, I have a blueprint of what I want to stand for. And my hope is that through the design of the brand and through the activation, that ultimately the consumer will agree that I own that positioning. But you know, that's the kind of process. You just identify the territory, design the brand, and then you go activate it. And then you know, the goal is to ensure that however you want to design the brand is in concert with what the consumer believes about the brand.
And of course, you know, big shout out to my day job, voxpopme.com, agile qualitative research with videos. So you should be talking to customers, honestly. If you're not talking to your customers, how will you ever know? Now, but my question about when it comes to superior brands, it's always interesting to me, how do we establish that brand, right? And the ad contrarian, love him or hate him, Bob Hoffman, read his blog if you like to. But he made a good point. If you're getting off the interstate and you see a McDonald's and you see a hamburger shop, a local one, run by a family that lives there off the interstate, and you want a hamburger, where are you going to go? You probably are going to go to McDonald's because you know what to expect, right? You don't know that other brand. So how do we figure out, how do we build that brand? Is it just about, you know, being in front of people nonstop, sharing our story everywhere, having a multi-channel strategy? Or how do we build that? How do we get that accomplished?
Yeah. So, I mean, inherent in your question is a couple different things. One is, how do you figure it out? And then the other is, how do you build it and ultimately own it? Right. So let me go back to the 80s. And there were a number of what I'll call mass discounters. You had Zaire, you had Venture, you had Walmart, you had a number, you had Kmart, you had Target, you had a number of these brands that all were trying to stand for something somewhat similar. And that was low prices, right? Large assortment, low prices. And so they knew that this would matter to consumers. Well, the way that you identify it is through, and again, I have this tool in the book, but you go and you test different positioning ideas with consumers and you look for the size of the market and then the appeal of the idea. Okay. And so, but all of them had identified a similar territory. Now, all of a sudden, it's who's going to own it. They're all competing for the same territory. And one of the things, you know, it's not enough to know the position in the marketplace. You then have to activate it in a way that consumers believe and agree that you are better at that positioning than anybody else. And so Walmart was ruthless in delivering low costs. Everything from, if you've ever been to Bentonville, if you've ever gone to their offices, I can tell you they don't, you know, they're very thrifty. Everything from the way that their buildings are built, to the way that the offices look, to the way that they traveled. At one point, it was rumored that they were traveling on Greyhound because it was cheaper, to their labor model, to the way in which they operate, to their logistics, their supply chain, the way in which their merchants negotiate with vendors, et cetera, et cetera. Everything about their brand was ruthlessly devoted to being low cost so that they could deliver not a low cost, but a lower price to consumers. And so over time, they were able to achieve that positioning. They were perceived by consumers to be a lower priced mass discounter. And lo and behold, what ended up happening? Venture no longer exists. Zaire no longer exists. Target had to reposition itself because it could not compete head to head with Walmart. And so Walmart repositioned itself to this kind of designer, affordable designer chic, right? So they're lower priced than the department stores, and they have a nicer assortment than Walmart, but they're still a mass discounter. So they've shifted their positioning so that they weren't on top of Walmart, so that they could actually find a way to succeed in the marketplace. So the key here, where I'm going with this, is you have to identify it, but then the way in which you live your brand, the way you behave all the time, affects the way that it's activated, and then affects the impression and perception that consumers have. And the really, really hard part of this is the activation. You know, on paper, if you do the work, you can identify the position, but then you have to go find a way to deliver that positioning every day through every employee, every interaction with the brand, you know, every way in which you build things, your real estate choices, your hiring choices. You have to activate that in a consistent way so that you can own the position. And that really is very hard.
That is one reason why I'm always a fan in content strategy of planning and doing, right? Like, because at the end of the day, planning is hard enough, but actually driving results. And that's when Seth Godin was on the show when his latest book dropped and he talked about perfectionism. I mean, I agree with him. There's no such thing as perfectionism in marketing anymore, if there ever was. You just have to ship things, right? You have to get things out the door and you have to see what works and what doesn't work. That's one reason why we do the live stream, right? Because why wouldn't we share it with a live audience? And then we share it on the podcast channels, we share it on TV. Now, you talked about the cheapest brands, and I want to mention this really quickly. No, don't at me, my friends, and tell me you want me to buy something from you. But here's the thing. Low, the cheapest thing, is not for everybody, right? I mean, when you mentioned that story, I was thinking about Southwest Airlines, you know, or even Allegiant. And I am not going to fly them, period. Like, not, never. In fact, I used to have debates with the VP of sales, and he would always say, well, if you always fly American Airlines, that can't be cheaper. And I actually think it is cheaper, because once you have status and whatever. But my point is, just because it's cheaper, not everybody is going for cheaper, right? I'm going for comfortable. Why do I have a good chair? Because I want to be comfortable, right? My problem was I needed something to put my head on. So whatever that's worth. Now, I think, Kim, you embedded this already to an extent. You talk about the positioning concept in your book. So how does that look, and how do we move it from the beginning to the activation?
Yeah, so, well, actually, let me say one thing, because you just said something that was really interesting, which is that different consumers want different things. And so, yeah. So that point is really important when you're thinking about positioning. Let's think about cars, right? There are so many different positions in the marketplace, you know, family cars, sports cars, cars that are centered on safety, cars that are centered on comfort, cars that are centered on reliability. These are all different, unique positions in the marketplace. And so what you're trying to do as a strategist is say, let me go look at the space of automobiles, you know, and how might I segment this? Byron Sharp would not agree with this, okay? But how might I segment this marketplace? Where are white space opportunities? If I'm trying to launch a new car, what needs in the marketplace are not being met? Or maybe there are brands that exist, but they're not doing a good job, right? And so, and this gets to then your, I think your, so I completely agree with you. There are very few categories where everybody has the same need. You know, generally, even water, people want different things out of their water. It could be a bottle shape. It could be the top on the bottle water. It could be the taste of the water. It could be how the water is sustainable, or how it came out of the ground, or how, and so forth. So, you know, we're the source of the water. And so consumers vary. And when you're doing this work in positioning, you're actually trying to find a space that other brands are not delivering on, and that you can deliver on better, you know, better than anybody else, but that matters to consumers. And ideally is a white space territory. So, but anyway, your second point then was a little bit about, I think, the positioning concept, what it is. Was that the question?
There was a positioning concept. Yep.
Okay. So just, you know, to explain, you know, where did that come from? you know, why did I, you know, I started the book really with the positioning concept, and part of it was based on my experience with entrepreneurs, with students, with executives, where I realized that we know a lot about product development. We teach a lot about this, but we don't know a lot about what products we should be building. You know, what's the position in the marketplace that we should be going for? How do we design a brand to deliver that? And part of delivering the brand is the product. And so when I wrote this book, I was really trying to address what I call the theory doing gap, that a lot of marketing is theory based. If you pick up academic books, they tend to be a lot of theories and concepts, but not a lot of practical application or tools. And if you pick up a managerial book, they tend to be a lot of stories, a lot of anecdotes. And what I thought was missing is, how do I help executives learn actually how to apply theory to their business? And so the very first tool that I talk about in the book is this positioning concept. And what it really is a way of testing different ideas that you can place in the, you know, into the marketplace to identify which is going to be most compelling. Let me tell you a little bit about what I'm getting ready to do in less than 2 months with a group of students. What I do is I pit them into groups. I teach them about these tools. We work on a project. This year, we're going to work on a project with McElhaney, the CSMO, the Chief Sales and Marketing Officer for McElhaney. And what the student teams have to do is identify a new to the world product for Tabasco. Okay, the brand is Tabasco, but they have to identify a new to the world product. They have to use the tool to write the positioning concepts. And then what we do is we test their ideas. And it really is a bit of a competition. Who's going to identify the biggest potential idea for Tabasco? And so, you know, that's an example where I'm not just, you know, when I'm working with my students, I'm MBA students, graduate students, we're not just talking about identifying a differentiated position. They're actually working on a consulting project for a company where they then have to take the tool, they learn about it, you know, in one class, and then they have to go apply the tool to the consulting project to identify a new to the world product for, in this case, Tabasco. So the chapter really walks through, how do you pick apart a positioning concept? How do you write it? How do you test it? And so that, and all of this then is to identify that, quote, territory that you want your brand to go after.
And thank you so much for talking about practical things, practical advice. And I'll give you an example. It drives me crazy when people say to me, oh, who do you read to learn new things? And don't get me wrong, I read stuff all the time. I learn stuff. I learn things all the time from books and articles and whatnot. But in marketing, the way you learn, in addition to the theory, you have to jump in. You have to jump into Pardot and you have to fiddle with the email campaigns. You have to hop into HubSpot and you just have to. Otherwise, you can't learn and you can't see where the exceptions are. And that's, I think a lot of people forget about that. So at the end of the day, you know, you can listen to us talk about what is a positioning concept, but go through the worksheet, try it, work through it, think through it. It's very different. You know, I joke, I sit here every Sunday, Kim, and watch, I don't know, 18 hours of football. That doesn't mean I can play in the NFL, right? Like, just because I know how to do it doesn't mean I can be Tom Brady or whomever.
So, you know what's so funny about that? I just had this argument, or this debate, I should say, with an individual who said that a CEO wanted to hire a digital native. Because the belief is, and this, by the way, I hear a lot, I need to hire for CMO a digital native. What they mean is I need to hire a 28-year-old so that, because they will then know digital. And I said, that is completely flawed. And I said, if you believe that, then Walmart should hire my mother, because she is a supreme shopper. She really is a very good shopper. And she could then make a great CMO because she understands shopping. Digital natives really don't understand strategy. They may know how to post something on Twitter or TikTok, but that does not mean that they understand the channels, strategy, positioning, you know, which channels to use in which ways, how to measure the they don't know that. And so this is very flawed when you, to your point, I think it's very flawed that you have to have experience and practice doing it, which is why, by the way, in the very last chapter, I've never seen a book that does this, but the last chapter is nothing but practice, ways to practice using the tools so that, because my goal in this book is to build skill and proficiency, not just knowledge, but skill and proficiency. And so the last chapter is like all sorts of ways in which you can practice using the tools so that you can get better at them.
It's the only way to do it, but you certainly have to understand why you're doing it, what you're doing. I'll give you an example, everyone. So my live shows, my articles, everything. We're just chatting. You know, we're having a conversation. I'm learning a lot. I'm having fun. I'm finally talking to another adult today, you know. But here's the thing. These shows are pretty deliberate. Some people might say very calculated, what we're talking about, how much time is allotted. So there's a strategy behind it. You might not see it. And the same is true for just about everything else in marketing. And if you can do that, it is very difficult to build that superior brand. Kim, I really appreciate you coming on the show. Make sure everyone, you check out her book, Positioning for Advantage. It is available on Amazon. It is in the carousel if you're watching on Amazon and authenticstorytelling.net/live under the book section. Kim, it was my pleasure to have you on the show. Thanks for sharing your insights.
Thank you so much.
That's a wrap. Thanks for tuning in. Please rate and review our show on your favorite podcast channels. And don't forget to share this episode with your networks. We appreciate you. Until next time, let the best stories win.